Today is December 13th, 2017, and this is episode number 441 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm headed to the post office. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note.
Pew, pew, pew.
At ACM at macobserver.com. Jeff Gamet, Johnny on the spot, ready to go with the sound effects.
Hey, I'm your Foley man. Sometimes.
Pro level Foley work there.
So if you're headed up to the post office, I'm assuming you realized that that traveling to certain destinations can be a lot cheaper through the U.S. Postal Service than, say, on an airplane.
this is true, although I fret about, you know, mailing myself to, say, another continent.
Sure. But can you imagine when they open up the package, going through customs? And they're like, oh, what's this? And you say, it's okay. I'm a present. You know, so hopefully you don't get
so taxed. Are you familiar with the Velvet Underground, Jeff? Mm-hmm. Do you know the song The Gift?
I probably do, and just don't remember the names.
So The Gift is this fantastic sort of really feedbacky, distorted, droning background music. Mm-hmm. And on top of this distorted, drony, background, groovy jam that's going on, which I think the music in it is just fantastic, but it truly does serve as a background to the bass player, the British bass player, whose name is bizarrely escaping me right now. Bass player, I cannot believe I can't remember this name.
Vivian Trevorfold.
No, that is not it.
Oh, come on. Didn't that sound like a wonderfully British name?
John Cale. Good Lord. John Cale. So the British-born John Cale is telling a story about Waldo Emerson. Mm-hmm. I think it's Emerson, who mails himself to his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And the story goes, the spoiler alert, by the way, folks. Because there's a story involved here. The story goes from, you know, Waldo being excited because he's going to mail himself to his girlfriend who's moved away to go to college. Mm-hmm. And then the girlfriend who just had a busy night out with her girlfriend and this guy who's like an octopus, hands all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it goes back and forth, and he's so excited, and he's going to be mailed, and he gets there, and she gets a package delivered, and then she's going to open the package, and she can't open the package. I can't get a grip, as John Cale says. And so she goes and gets a crowbar and thrusts it through the packaging, through the box, and right into Waldo Emerson's head, causing rhythmic red, arcs of red to shimmer in the daylight. And that's the end of the song.
So I read an article. It's been a few months ago, about how parents used to mail their children through the postal service. Like, you want to send? Yeah, you're sending the kid to live with another relative. You would buy postage.
No
for
one
them
did that,
and they sent, not in a package. You know, so you didn't put them in a box. You gave them their little bag with some food in it, and they had a little tag showing that their postage had been paid, and they'd get on the postal train and go off to the other city where the other family members would be ready to pick up the parcel, little Bobby or Susie or whoever.
No one did that.
I'm just saying I read it on the internet, and there were photographs.
Well, that's interesting. I suppose and hope that the story had a happier ending than The Gift.
I would hope so, too.
Yeah. So anyway, great song. 1960s, completely out of left field in the 1960s. But it's, I do truly love the music. I'm a huge Velvet Underground fan.
I really enjoy Velvet Underground, but it's one of those things where there's certain bands where I love their music. I recognize it when I hear it, but I never bother to figure out the names of any of the songs. I just enjoy them in the moment. And Velvet Underground, they're one of those bands. I love hearing them, and I can't tell you the title of any song.
All right. Fair enough. Well, now you know one. The Gift.
The Gift. There we go.
The Gift.
So now what I'll do whenever anyone says, oh, do you know Velvet Underground? I'm just going to come back with, oh my God, I love The Gift.
There you go.
And the thing is, I'm sure I've heard the song.
It's Waldo Jeffers. Waldo Jeffers. I got the name wrong. It was bothering me. I had to look it up.
Oh, well, I'm surprised you haven't looked up, did a Google search on, did people mail their children?
Did people mail their children? By the way, this is the most epically rabbit holy opening banter.
Yeah, ever. But we're educating people.
Smithsonian Magazine says a brief history of children sent through the mail. Smithsonian Magazine says it.
Boom.
One of the most overlooked yet most significant innovations of the
early. I bet it was the Smithsonian first article that I read.
This is June 14th. All right. Might be the post office decision to start shipping large parcels and packages through the mail. While private delivery companies flourished during the 19th century, the parcel post dramatically expanded the reach of mail order companies to America's many rural communities, as well as the demand for their products. You know, that makes sense from the standpoint of, you know, like the rise of operations like Sears and Roebuck. Mm-hmm. That it required the post office expanding its service to parcel delivery, large parcel delivery.
Yep.
So almost immediately it had some unintended consequences as some parents tried to send their children through the mail. It got some headlines when it happened, probably because it was so cute. What? Just a few weeks after the parcel post began, an Ohio couple named Jesse and Matilda Beagle mailed, quote unquote, their, I don't know why that's in quotes, their eight-month-old son, James, to his grandmother, who lived just a few miles away in Batavia. According to Lynch, baby James, just shy of the 11-pound weight limit for packages sent via parcel post, and his, quote-unquote, delivery cost his parents only 15 cents in postage. Although they did insure him for $50.
Good Lord. Well, they're not animals. Of course they insure
the quirky stories soon made newspapers. For the next several years, similar stories would occasionally surface as other parents followed suit. What the crap is wrong with people? What the crap is wrong with people? One famous case in February 19th, 1914, 4-year-old girl named Charlotte May Pierstorf was mailed via train from her home in Grangeville, Idaho, to her grandparents' house 73 miles away. Her story became legendary. It even made a children's book called Mailing May. Postage was cheaper than a train ticket. Duh.
See, so my joke about mailing yourself even to another country becomes even better because I worked in the whole thing about cheaper than flying.
Yeah.
See?
Oh, all right. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. You know what is a little bit either less or more interesting, depending on your point of view?
Do tell.
That would be the general state of Apple.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean by the general state of Apple?
Well, you know, it's the topic du jour for sure, because, you know, we had the root access flaw. We had the fix of the root access flaw, and then we had the reintroduction of the root access flaw, and then the fix to the reintroduction to the root access flaw. Mm-hmm. Right. We had the I equals A question mark bug.
Uh-huh. I'm calling that the autocorrect bug.
The autocorrect bug, sure.
It's easier.
All right. My favorite thing, by the way, would be Ohio fans.
Oh, that was really funny.
The Buckeye fans at the end zone spelling out their name with a, you know, O-H-A question mark O with the, you know, with the little,
with the box. And yeah,
the binary thing.
Yeah.
The not binary thing, the semaphore thing, the, you know, where they hold up the color pieces of paper.
Oh, right. That's right. Not semaphore. That's just,
shut up. You're not the boss of me.
Okay. Mr. Mostly.
Anyway, so that was certainly funny. And then we had, there's some other issue, some other iMessage issue that was happening. It's like, there's been so many, I can't even keep them all straight. And then we had, Apple 2 months ago. John Keat wrote a terrific rant about this morning.
That man, his special gift is rant.
It is. So 2 months ago, Apple told us that airport devices weren't affected by the crack exploit.
And for those of you that don't know what the crack exploit is, there we go. There's an inherent flaw in the design of the WPA2 security protocol that allowed hackers to be able to jump in the middle of encrypted data streams on a specific Wi-Fi network and grab parts of those and decrypt them.
Yeah.
And it was just something that was built in. So it didn't matter what device maker you favor, you were going to have the problem.
And yeah, this is a Wi-Fi issue, not yeah. like a, say, an Apple issue.
Right. But all the device makers, they had to fix it. So Apple rolled out patches right away. All these other companies that make Wi-Fi routers, they rolled out their patches fairly quickly. And
it's for devices.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, so we got a quick tvOS fix. We got a quick iOS fix, and we got a quick Sierra fix.
Mm-hmm. And High Sierra fix. Oh,
High Sierra fix. Thank you.
Did they need to go back farther on the Mac? I don't remember, but whatever they needed to do, they were really fast about getting all of those updates out.
Yeah, they got it done.
Yeah, which is great.
But they told us the airport routers we're good to go.
And that's something that Dave Hamilton questioned, because if Apple's doing standard WPA2, then no, the airport base station would be susceptible. And it turns out that, well, apparently it was, even though they said it wasn't, because the update for the airport base stations came out this week.
Right. Despite Apple telling us that it wasn't affected. I mean, this is, listen, the root access flaw, folks, was the single worst security bungle in computing history, in my opinion. I certainly can't think of anything that comes even close to how bad that was.
I don't know. How about Equifax and their whole thing where they had everyone's data in an unencrypted database that was just accessible?
Oh, okay. So from a software standpoint, from an operating system maker standpoint, this is the single worst security bungle that I can account. It's, I mean, again, to cite John Keat, let me find that quote because it's a good quote.
Oh, I know which quote you're going for.
Yeah, it's a good one. He said that the Keystone Cops of Cupertino decided to make it clear to the world that in comparison, Microsoft, even in its heyday, were a bunch of rank amateurs in blundering security.
That is a good quote.
Yeah, and Microsoft has had some doozies. The root access flaw was awful, and it took Apple, like, it was out there for a net total of 73 days if you count the oh my god, this is here, the subsequent fix, the reintroduction, and then the fix to that. It took 73 days to get that fixed. Well, let me rephrase that. It was out there for 73 days. We have no idea how long Apple knew about it.
True.
It might have only taken a couple of days to fix.
I'm thinking.
But it existed. But that's even worse. To me, if Apple didn't, I don't know which is worse.
Yeah, I don't know.
So Yeah, go ahead, Reed. Do you have another thought on that?
I was going to toss out a hypothesis that I came up with today for the extremely delayed fix for the airport base stations. So here's how this goes. And I'm going to preface this with, I don't see this as an excuse. And if my hypothesis is correct, it's still a really big problem. So Apple disbands the airport engineer team. Some of the people are assigned to other projects. Some people don't work at Apple anymore because they either left or they were laid off.
Wait, is this the point where I can like interject with why the crap did Apple disband the airport team?
No, because we're going to go down a rat hole.
Okay, fine.
So just keep your britches on. And we can go down rat holes after this part. Okay, so this team is scattered to the winds, and so when the whole WPA flaw is exposed, higher level managers are like, "Oh crap, is this a problem? What devices does it affect for us?" And they're going down the list, and okay, we've got all these devices. Okay, what about our base stations? We don't know. So now they have to go and find people from those teams and say, hey, is this a problem? Because they can't just look at their own documentation to see exactly how they implemented everything. So the people that they can find that worked on the project probably said something like, we didn't do a standard WPA2 setup on our devices, so we're probably not susceptible. And the management team was like, okay, great, and just ran with that without doing anything else. So if that's the case, then I could see why they would suddenly end up with this long window where after the fact, someone else ends up finding the problem, and now they go back and fix it. And that's a really big problem.
So your thought here is that it's just gross incompetence.
Okay, yeah, let's go down. Let's go with that. I think that it's very possible that it was simply incompetence that left us with this long delay.
Well, that's concerning.
Sure, yeah.
It's horribly concerning. Everything that we've seen, let me rephrase this, we've seen a lot of things in the last month that are very, very concerning from a quality standpoint and from a security standpoint. And it's hard to understand how this stuff slipped by the brainiacs, the brain trust at Apple. I mean, like, for one thing, I am guessing that, and I usually hate going down this road, mm-hmm. but if Steve Jobs were here, people would have been fired, and people may have been fired. Tim Cook may have fired people.
Yeah, it's totally possible.
We don't know, it's possible that simply the people needed to keep this from happening have left, or I don't know what's going on. Yeah, laid off because Apple needs to lay off people. I don't know what's going on, but it's concerning.
Yeah, I do find it concerning that we've had this concentrated window, I suppose, of issues where if it was one at a time, except for the root thing, holy crap. But if it's just like one as a one-off thing, we would probably have a reaction that's more along the line of, all right, well, that was kind of messed up and just move on. But when we have this cluster of things where we're seeing that for a lot of stuff, then yeah, I feel like we are now getting a pattern. And that pattern is concerning.
It is very concerning. And so, all right. So, I wanted to go down this. I wanted to go down this next path here with John Keaton on Pop.0, which we'll record later today.
Well, since I'm definitely not John.
Let me mention it here.
A different path, I bet.
Yeah, probably will. Apple has been hiring television execs left and right. Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, it's real easy. I'm certainly subject to this. I know that some of our readers have been subject to this. It's like, I don't care about TV. get our Macs right and get our, you know, get our Macs iterated, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see some new Macs. You know, let's see some iMac Pros that like, you know, are accessible for upgrading RAM and hard drives, right? Let's see consistency, you know, the consistency with features. Let's not have everybody's root access to everybody's device exposed to the entire planet. You know, let's do some of these things. And who cares about these TV execs? But the reality is that the guys running the two guy, in this case, it's two guys running TV. It's Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep, those guys seem to have been given free run to hire and build the team they need to build to get done what they want to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like they're acting with some autonomy. So that, just yesterday,
that's the impression I have.
We had two new people hired yesterday, two business affairs executives. So I don't know what a business affairs executive does in the TV industry, but someone who is probably a background operations kind of person. So we had two people hired for that. We had we had someone poached for developing content outside the U.S. a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, like Apple's hiring all these people and they're building out this team and they seem to be running autonomously. I think we need to see some of that throughout Apple. I think Apple is too big to run as a startup.
I agree completely. And what I'm hoping is that we're seeing Apple realize that at the executive level, and the first publicly visible example of that is what's happening with their entertainment industry push. So
I don't think we have any evidence to back that up, except for the fact that it seems like either TV is getting all the attention from Apple's leadership, or TV run autonomously.
Yeah. And what I'm hoping is TV's being run autonomously.
That's what I hope too.
Yeah. So if TV's being run autonomously, to me, that's a really good sign. And while I know a lot of people look at the whole television movie music thing and they're like, holy crap, give me a Mac that doesn't crash when the screensaver kicks on. Or in my case, holy crap, give me a Mac where I don't lose all the fingerprints and Touch ID on my Mac if it crashes. Seriously, that's a thing. But here's the deal. If Apple was not the company they were, I don't think they would be looking towards the future. And that's something they always do. And Apple knows, especially now that they're as big as they are, you have to make sure that you're diversified so that when one big revenue stream goes away, the next one is already ramped up to take its place.
Right. Apple has so much money. It has a responsibility to do something with that money.
Right.
And a fiduciary, has a legal fiduciary responsibility to do something with all that money.
Right. And I think that as Apple was going through what they now realize is a transition that needed to happen for the whole entertainment side of things, they tried to not run that as a separate thing. And now everyone's paying the price for it because the people that needed to be focusing on quality in the technology products we're buying weren't doing their job.
Right. And, you know, the elephant in the room, the elephant that's not in the room is the previously mentioned Steve Jobs, because Steve Jobs was such a fanatic about detail and about the little things and about catching the little things. And like, you know, Apple needs someone who can do that. And it doesn't seem like it's Tim Cook.
Well,
and I love Tim Cook. I've argued that Tim Cook may be the best CEO of Apple ever, although I'm maybe reconsidering that in light of the last few weeks. But I mean, I'm not bagging on Tim Cook here. He just has a different skill set. But Apple needs someone with that ability and the power to do something about it.
Yep, I'll agree with that. I am a little reticent to do the Steve Jobs comparisons, because I think if Steve Jobs were here today, the Apple that we're looking at right now is not the Apple we would have. And I'm not saying that as a positive or negative thing. It's just fact of the matter. Whoever is your top management team, it changes how things happen in a company. So would Tim Cook have let these things happen? Well, probably not. But these the problems we're having may very well have been different issues. And I mean, I don't know how Tim Cook really acts behind the scenes. I've heard people say that that he can be a very harsh manager, and if he's not happy with something, man, you're gone. You know, like people talk about the elevator firings that Steve Jobs did.
Yeah.
Like I have heard, but I have not confirmed, that Tim will just, boom, you are gone. You mess it up bad, out, done.
Yeah. I don't. Maybe this comes back to something we mentioned last week, is that we need to see more from Apple right now, mm-hmm. explaining to its customers that it is either going to get to the bottom of what happened and fix it, or explaining to us how it happened. And we haven't gotten that so far.
Apple is not big on transparency.
And I don't think that's an issue for us. We got an apology from Tim Cook for Apple Maps, which is nowhere near as important as what's been happening in the last couple of weeks.
An apology from Apple Maps? That wasn't transparency. That was mea culpa.
Fine. I want a mea culpa for this.
And the mea culpa that we got, I don't think was adequate for the problem that we experienced. The mea culpa,
yeah,
that we you got. You mean
for now?
Yes.
Yeah, we've only sort of gotten a mea culpa. We got a mea culpa through statement to Reuters for the root access law.
Right. So, okay. So for those of you that aren't up to speed on that, I'll give you the quick backstory. So when the root security flaw happened, or when it was revealed, and this is the thing where someone could gain access, root level access to your computer without a password. For example, going into the login screen on your computer when it first boots up, and if you have it set where you type a name as opposed to seeing a list of users, type in root, go to the password field, leave it blank, and just keep clicking the login thing. After several times, you're logged in as root on the computer. That's a huge security flaw. So when this became a big thing, Apple jumped on it, which is good. The fact that it happened in the first place is really bad, and I think is inexcusable. What happened next was that we were in a position where we had to both praise Apple and condemn them for the way they handled the situation. The praise part comes from when we said, hey, check it out. Apple finds out about this security flaw, and within hours, essentially, we've got an update out to fix it on our Macs. So that was fantastic. Where the condemnation comes in is the way Apple followed up after that. And that's the part where, instead of taking a very open and transparent stance on this and saying, look, here's what happened. We screwed up really bad. And these are the things we are doing now to address what happened. Here's what took place, and here's why it's not going to happen again, ever. And instead, what we got was a statement that says, yes, our customers are important to us. Security is important to us. What happened is bad. We don't want to lose anyone's trust. And we are now doing an internal audit to make sure something like this doesn't happen again. That was enough to appease some people. But for people that are like really following this closely, and people that feel like they've been betrayed by Apple on some level, or at least had that trust broken, it didn't feel like it was enough. And And Brian, that's what you've been saying, and I agree. And I think
that, and yet we have another thing today. We've got Apple telling us 2 months ago that apparently my Apple Watch wasn't muted. I'm sorry about that. We had Apple telling us 2 months ago that the airport routers weren't affected by crack, and yet we get a patch for crack yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 months later, I might add.
Yeah. And that's why,
not quite 2 months, but
why close. I came up with the hypothesis that I have to try and explain, at least in my mind, why we went essentially 2 months without this crack update for the airport base stations. But I certainly don't see it as an excuse for why it's okay that we went 2 months without this update.
Right. And why we were told in the first place that it was okay.
Yeah. Well, if my hypothesis is true or accurate, that would explain why we were told what we were initially. And then it was later on, Apple found out, oh, nope, we were wrong. Our bad. Here, have an update. But we didn't even get an our bad with it. It was just, oh, here's the update. So,
man, I don't know what's going on. I am actually more worried about these things than I was about 2016, thinking so bad, with only 14 new products released. Okay. You know, at least we've got new products this year. Actually lots of new products.
Yeah, we did. And you remember it was last fall when Apple got together a few journalists and bloggers and sat down with them and talked about the Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time for Apple to do the same thing. And this time they're going to sit down with whatever their handful of people happens to be and say, look, here's what happened. Here's what's going on. Here's what we're doing. And then give them examples, you know, like something tangible. They're talking with other engineers, or they're seeing something that they can put with this. So it's not just listening to Craig Federighi and Phil Schiller say, wow, yeah, that was really bad, and we feel really horrible about it. But hey, it's going to be okay.
What if it's time for Scott Forstall to finally come back?
That's not going to happen.
I know it's not. And I don't even know that I want it to.
I don't think I want it to. And I don't think he wants to.
I bet you that Scott Forstall would like to come back to Apple.
Really?
I bet you that he has some daddy issues going on there with Steve. Yeah, I do.
I don't know. Maybe. But I'm kind of thinking if you leave a company like Apple and you know that they wrote him a big check to go along with leaving and keeping his mouth shut, and now you're winning Tony Awards, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'd be kind of inclined to think, you know, let's put some more shows on Broadway and win some more Tonys. That was kind of fun. Let's have a party.
I don't know, man. I hear what you're saying. I don't know. I don't know the guy. I haven't actually met him, so. All right. So yesterday on TMO's Daily Observations, a little podcast that you do on a periodic basis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of that.
How's that for a vaguely accurate description?
Well, you know, you are mostly pedantic.
I am mostly pedantic. On Daily Observations, we spent, John and I, John Martellaro got into a big argument. And I think you guys revisited that today with Kelly and John. A little bit,
but so not, my buddy not John, like yesterday,
my buddy John gave what I believe is an apologist view at the iMac Pro not being user accessible for changing the RAM. The darn thing is sealed. It's sealed.
It's like buying an iPad in that sense. The configuration you get is a configuration you get, period. Same thing like with my Touch Bar MacBook Pro.
What we bought is all
it will ever be.
We don't know yet if the RAM and hard drive are soldered.
They are.
We don't know that.
We don't know that, but I just kind of know it. I mean, if they've designed it the way they have, why would they socket the SSD and the RAM?
I would be flabbergasted. I'm going to be surprised if both. I'll be shocked if both are soldered. I will be surprised if either is soldered.
I will be shocked if one or both are not soldered.
Okay, so we'll find out. It goes on sale on Thursday, right?
Yes, so tomorrow, 14th. Which means iFixit is going to be in line right away to get a hold of one of these. Now, this is assuming they actually are available tomorrow as opposed to go on sale tomorrow.
Right, which we don't know yet.
Yeah.
So we'll find that out. But we got off on such a – we actually had two topics yesterday. We didn't get to the second one at all.
No, we didn't.
And my point there is that – we focused mostly on how inappropriate it is for Apple to release a sealed machine for the pro market, from my perspective. And John was offering his apologies view. And what we didn't talk a whole lot about is the fact that this does seem to be a beast.
Yeah,
it's so I thought like we could talk. We just spent a bunch of time complaining about Apple, so let's actually spend some time praising Apple with apologies to Bill Shakespeare.
Oh yeah, Bill, the dude.
Right. So Apple did ship the iMac Pro this year, and that is so exciting. Apple said that it would ship this product this year, and they're shipping it this year. And that is so exciting. It's like, you know, we have at least gotten new hardware products out of Apple this year. You know, we've gotten updated MacBook Pros. We've gotten updated MacBooks. We got a sort of half-assed updated MacBook Air. We got updated iMacs. We got this brand new iMac Pro. We got a bunch of new software products. We're not getting the HomePod this year. Unfortunately, it's being delayed, but I'm okay with that. And the iMac Pro does indeed offer pro performance, and it does so at a pretty reasonable price. Mm-hmm. At least if you compare it to trying to cobble together something similar in the PC world.
Right. And so what people are finding is that if they go for comparable parts to, you know, trying to match one-to-one as close as they can, that the comparable PC is going to cost a little bit more. So in the case of the entry level iMac Pro, which comes in at $5,000 or $4,999, a comparable PC that's built will cost you $5,100.
Right. And that was what Marcus Brownlee, a big YouTuber who got one of these devices a week early from Apple. That's what he put together. Being top men, we haven't actually done our own price checking.
Yeah. Well, I'm comfortable with his price checking.
Yes. In this particular case, I am too. It's a great review. We linked to it yesterday, or you linked to it yesterday in the TDO show notes. We can stick a link in our own show notes. It's a really good review. The machine looks great. The space gray color is just terrific. I I'm tense and cranky as all get out about it not being accessible. And I am also just disgusted that there's no touch bar on the keyboard.
And didn't I mention briefly at the end of TDO yesterday that I think that's the sign that the touch bar is dead, that it's just one off. It's for the MacBook Pro two versions, and we may not ever see it again.
If we do see it again, I'm going to be really angry, because if we're going to have the touch bar, it should be ubiquitous. It should be available at the very least, if not always included. It should at least be available on the desktop. If you're going to have a feature like that, make it available everywhere. I'm back to complaining. I'm sick to death of feature drift. I'm tired of my iPad working differently from my iPhone, working differently from my iPhone 10. Mm-hmm. Right. Especially when they don't have to be different. If we're going to do 3D touch on iOS, let's have 3D touch on iOS, not just on some iPhones. right? If we're going to do face ID, I'm assuming that Face ID will come to other devices, but if we're going to do Face ID, let's do Face ID. If we're going to have, if we're going to have the app switcher require you to press and hold to Foursquare apps, let's do that. Right. And if we're going to have the gosh darned touch bar, let's have a gosh darn touch bar. Let's have it everywhere. And it didn't come out on Mac on iMac Pro. And that's ridiculous.
And to me, that was the indicator that it's not coming to anything else.
Yeah, we didn't get Face ID on iMac Pro.
No, we didn't.
Why don't we have Face ID on iMac Pro?
I have an idea about Face ID. Okay. So here's the deal. This morning we got the new, well, or maybe last night, I don't remember, time blurs for me, but like in the last 24 hours, we got the news that Apple is using part of that manufacturing investment fund that they put together, you know, $1 billion, mm-hmm. and they are, and they invested, it's like $340 million.
Something like that, yep.
Yep, in a company called Finisar.
Yep.
And what Finisar does is they make this special type of laser that's used as like a proximity sensor. And we're seeing it in two places right now. We're seeing it in the AirPods. This is part of the system that figures out when you've put an AirPod in your ear or taken it out. And we're also seeing it as part of the TrueDepth camera system on the iPhone X. So one of the things that Apple said was that they're going to order in the next quarter 10 times the amount of these sensor wafer things than were ordered over the previous year worldwide. So a huge increase in the number of sensors they need. Now, are they really going to make that many iPhone X? Are they really going to make that many AirPods? And my assumption is
so basically the thing saying that they couldn't do Face ID from a sensor standpoint on iMac Pro yet.
Yet.
And you think it's coming?
I think it's coming to more devices. I mean, if they're increasing their purchase, so it's 10 times what the entire world was purchasing, mm-hmm. that's a serious amount of tech that they're buying. I mean, so much so that they gave Finisar $390 million so they can build a 700,000 square foot manufacturing facility to make these chips just for Apple.
$340 million, right?
$390. I think it's $390. A 9 and a 4 look similar.
If only we had some way of.
I'm looking at my article.
Of checking that.
Yeah, so I'm using myself as my source. That's okay, right? Is that too meta?
Yes. No, it's not.
Okay. So anyhow, with the whole Finisar thing happening, I'm guessing that Apple is ready to bring the whole Face ID to more devices. So I'm guessing next year's iPhones, besides the 10, are going to have Face ID. And with sensors in this volume, okay, maybe we're going to start seeing it in Apple's displays. So like the displays built into iMacs, MacBook Pro. And when they create their standalone display, which they have said is coming to go along with the new Mac Pro, that would be a great place to put one of these sensors also.
Yeah, fair enough. Seems to me that should have been in this model. It's not like they didn't know they were working on it, but hey, that's just me. Yep. But I really intended this segment to be positive.
How about if I roll up some positive for you?
Okay.
Okay. So for a computer starting at $5,000, mm-hmm. 27-inch 5K Retina display, mm-hmm. and 8, 10, and we've heard 14-core and 18-core models, up to 120 gigabyte of RAM. Base mm-hmm. model has 32 gigabytes. Mm-hmm. And there's a time when I could have seen Apple, not that long ago, releasing a machine like this with a base RAM of 16 gig. But they didn't. 32 gig base RAM.
Yeah, all right.
So that's a step in the right direction.
Okay, I guess they get a cookie for doing their job. That's great.
Yep. And it's a nice cookie. It's even one I can eat. And you would like too. So starting with a 1 terabyte SSD, and you can get 2 or 4 terabyte. So that's nice. And that Radeon Pro Vega 64 processor with 16 gigs of RAM, that GPU, that's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice machine. It is a nice machine, but with the exception of the fact that let me offer a little bit of context there. I know a lot of people don't ever upgrade their Macs. I've used that as an argument against having a lot of PCI slots for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like the reality is that people don't ever use them, and Apple tends to include as I'm going back to the cheese grater days, right?
Yeah.
Apple included in their Macs the kinds of things that PC users use PCI cards to upgrade to, right? So, you know, I always use that as a nice excuse is that most people don't use them, and that's fine. But you do need to use them sometimes, and I think the pro users need to upgrade their stuff a lot more than normal. To wit, when I got my iMac 5K, I could only afford a 512 gig SSD. Mm-hmm. And I'm just flat out of space. And SSDs have plummeted in price since late 2015, which is when I got this.
Right.
Right. So I'd love to be able to upgrade the hard drive on my machine now simply because I can afford to do it. And I think that's a lot of creative pros might be in the same position, not to mention the fact that there are SSD sizes. There's a 6 gig SSD out right now that didn't exist back in the day.
A 6 gig.
Yeah, six terabytes. Sorry,
I know what you meant. I was giving you a hard time.
There's a 6 terabyte SSD that didn't even exist when my iMac came out. Of course, to change my hard drive on this iMac, I've actually got to split the case or pay someone else to do it. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But the same thing with RAM. Like RAM that is affordable today is going to, or unaffordable today, it's going to be a lot less expensive in the future. So, and pros certainly need to upgrade the RAM.
Yep.
Okay. So aside from that,
here's some more cool stuff.
I'd love to have one of these things on my desk.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Okay. How about 10 gigabit Ethernet? That's really important for a lot of high-end video work.
Does it have it?
Yeah.
Does it not have it?
It totally has 10 gigabit Ethernet.
Yeah, that's good.
4 Thunderbolt 3 ports. So, you know,
yep, that's good too.
Yep.
And 4 USB ports.
USB 3 ports. Yep. And it has an SDXC card slot in it still.
Yep, that's good. It's good. Again, something that pros might use. It has a headphone cable, unlike iPhones.
Yep, headphone jack is on it still.
Yeah, jack. Thank you.
Yep.
No, it's a great machine internally. The specs on this thing are great. Performance on it appears to be fantastic. We haven't seen much on the more core versions yet.
Not yet.
Right. No one has those yet. Apple is starting off with the 8 core version. Okay. Or
eight and 10 core.
8 and 10. Okay. Right.
And the 10 core is what was being sent out to the early reviewers. And they were saying across the board that the 10 core is the fastest Mac they've ever used. Just hands down.
Yeah. Yeah, I would probably be relatively satisfied. I'm sure I'd be satisfied.
All right, so check this out, Brad.
With an 8-core one.
And I know this isn't a true consolation for lack of expandability, but with the ports that are on this iMac, you could set up 2 5K displays. You could have 3 5K displays running simultaneously, and you could still hook up 2 independent RAID systems and have blazing fast speeds for those.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's fracking awesome. And yeah,
you know what also totally would be good?
Yeah, if you could put more RAM in it when you're ready.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bigger hard drive. Listen, it's like if you look at the iMac 5K, I watched the video recently on how to OWC has a great video showing you the ridiculous lengths you have to go to.
Heat up around the edges of the display to loosen that adhesive, don't you?
They didn't do that on my model, but some models that's definitely the case.
Yeah.
I've got people talking outside in case you're hearing any noise.
I just figured it was a party
or the interns. stuck in the closet somewhere. What am I saying? I watched the video. There's plenty of room inside. Like what the iMac 5K is missing to replace the hard drive is an access hatch. It's not because it's like there's no room inside.
And same thing for the
access hatch. Yeah, and it has an access hatch for the RAM. The 5K does.
Yeah, I mean on the iMac Pro, there should be an access hatch.
Well, we haven't seen the inside yet. Right? Maybe there's no access ports because like you think they're soldered in. Mm-hmm. But that's still a mistake.
Sure.
So I mean, like, just put the access ports there, folks. It's not rocket science, man. Make the machine that I want rather than the machine that you want us to have. Of course, you know, I said that, and one of the things that Apple has been infamous for doing is you know, like what Steve said, how do customers know what they want until we show it to them?
Right. Yeah.
But in this particular
give
case,
them what they need, not what they're asking for.
I don't think that applies in this case. Upgrading RAM and upgrading hard drives is just reality. It's something that some people do, something that especially pro users.
All right. So I'm tossing this out here because I'm just curious what your response is going to be. Has it bothered you that on your iPad, there is not an extra memory card slot so you can pop in like a little micro SD card or something?
No.
And same thing for me. It doesn't bother me. The fact that I can't swap out a battery in my iPhone doesn't bother me. So I'm
when I have an Android user tell me how awesome that is, I just like, yeah.
Cool and look story, at bro. All the, yeah. And ask him how many batteries they own, but just the one. And look at the number of Android phones where you can't pop out the battery. It's a thing. So where I'm going with this, I'm wondering if it will ultimately be the same thing for most people with the iMac Pro, where the fact that it doesn't have these other things is kind of a non-issue for them.
No, I don't think so. I think that the iMac Pro, is going to suffer in the medium and long term.
Do you think that the MacBook Pro is suffering because we can't replace RAM in it?
Yeah, to a certain extent, sure.
Okay. And just so you know, I want to make it clear. I'm not saying these things because I'm trying to defend the way Apple's doing this. I would love this to be like my Pismo was. I popped that thing open and I swapped out hard drives and memory and it was great.
Well, for the MacBook Pro, it comes back to something that we've been pretty clear about. We weren't asking for the MacBook Pro to be as thin as it is and as small as it is. For pro users, that's not what they were clamoring for. They're clamoring for power and usability.
Mm-hmm.
And usability includes expandability.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that not being able to upgrade the RAM, because it's soldered in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
And it's the same for the SSD in the MacBook Pro. So what you buy is what you get.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's not like the Apple didn't learn this lesson from the Mac Pro, the trash can Mac Pro. The fact that you can't change out the GPUs and the CPU is a bona fide issue with that thing.
I agree. And I'm glad that Apple finally acknowledged that they engineered themselves into a corner they couldn't get out of with that computer.
Right. Okay. So let's see. Now we had a third topic, but we also have some stuff on our Facebook group. That's the Facebook group. Where is that again, Jeff?
Oh, that would be at facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
Oh yeah. That's a good place to go. We'd love for you to join us there so that you can give us feedback, feed us ideas, do our work for,
interact with us.
Interact with us and let us know what you think. You know, we'd very much appreciate that. Let's go through the suggestions we have for this week.
That sounds great because we have 5 minutes left, so we should be able to hit everything, right?
Yeah, and if there's enough time left, we can get into our other topic.
Right.
So Quentin James asked about an Easter egg in the Apple Store app. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, Brian, you totally have to do this. Do you have the Apple Store app?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. Yes. Open the Apple Store app on your iPhone or iPad, whatever.
Yep.
Okay, bottom right corner, search symbol. Tap that, the little magnifying glass.
Okay, yep.
And type
top let. Top right, you mean? Okay, let.
Oh, no, it's on bottom right for me. Okay, but anyhow, so you start a search, type let it snow.
Let it snow.
It's not working now.
Oh, look at that. That's awesome.
It didn't work for me. How weird. It was working
what
earlier.
What fun is that?
Okay, so for...
Oh, that's lovely.
So for those
nice job, Apple.
For those of you that it works, what happens is it snows on your screen. Snowflakes fall down.
It brought a lovely smile to my face. And, you know, even while I'm complaining about security and stuff, I'm okay that someone built this in.
Yeah, it's a fun little Easter egg. Now, here's the annoying thing. I did it the other day and had so much fun doing it that I took screenshots so that I could just have them.
Yeah, that's great.
And now totally when I'm typing let it snow, it's just not working.
Well, I'm very bummed for you. So Quentin had a question, though. He said, what other Easter eggs can you recall Apple sneaking into their apps? They used to do this all the time.
Yeah,
they stopped when Steve Jobs came back.
Yeah, you can find a lot of Easter eggs in the about screens for apps. Or if you did combination keys for when you're doing stuff with menu items, especially like with the Apple menu. You could get other little hidden things to pop up.
Right. Yeah, there was the lizard on the flag.
The lizard on the flag, yep.
Right? I think there was one version where there was a pirate.
Screen. Yep.
Yeah, on the about screen. And you had to, it was like a, I think that the there was an entire QuickTime, there was a QuickTime 3D thing, wasn't there?
There was, and now I don't remember what it was, but.
Was that what it was called?
Yeah, well, there was
QuickTime 3D Easter egg.
Yeah, and that was back when Apple was really pushing a lot of their QuickTime technology because they had so much for special effects built in, and as I recall, the original Matrix with the slow motion thing where that you'd spin around a scene.
Yes,
that was part of
the QuickTime technology. You can navigate QuickTime. Was it QuickTime VR? What was that called?
I want to say QuickTime VR, but now I'm not sure. Let's look at Mac Tracker and see if it has QuickTime in there.
So anyway, there is the Easter Egg Archive has for Mac OS 7.5. This would have been goodness gracious, 1990. Four-ish,
mm-hmm.
Right? Window shades credit, memory control panel, developers' names, monitor control panel, developer credit, secret about box game, color control panel, more eggs, the res edit, yay res edit, pig mode. There's at least 20 here listed, and I mean that was just in Mac OS 7.5. Apple used to do this stuff all the time. Steve Jobs put a stop to it when he came back because he didn't want. He wanted the folks to be on the products and not the developers.
Yeah. So, yeah, there were all kinds of cool little Easter eggs tucked away back then.
Right. Right, by the way, I had a Christmas present arrive.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
While we're
Happy
recording.
Holidays.
While we're recording. So I'm being teased about it even as we speak. All right. So that was his comment, used to do this stuff all the time. It'd be interesting if more stuff like this comes back. Of course, this is an Easter egg that is very much not about the developers. It's just a nice thing to bring a smile to our face. Rick Allen pointed us to the video that we did talk about it. Frank, said he suggested that we talk about the Lifehacker did a PSA that if you delete Apple Pay Cash, it's complicated to reinstall it. We'll just include a link to the show notes on that. Didn't you actually have that problem?
No. The problem I had was that I was using Apple Pay Cash with iOS 11.2 beta, developer beta. And when the official public release came out, it just completely quit working for me. And so I went through the weekend without it working. And then like Monday afternoon, it started working again.
Right, which is useful. So Lifehacker found, or if you do install your, do uninstall the Apple Pay Cash app, I said tap more in the far right corner of app drawer, tap edit in upper right. You will then see Apple Pay appear in the more apps section. Simply turn the switch on and Apple Pay Cash reappears.
Okay, so it's not too complicated, but it's kind of stupid where it's put because you may not find it to put it back in. I'm curious, why would someone want to uninstall Apple Pay Cash if they're using it or if they have it?
Accident? Annoyance? Who knows, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Chuck Williams asked the question. It's a simple question. What could Apple do to make you give up Apple products? Which is, so we had Brad Hurley wrote into Daily Observations. Did you see that? That's why we're recording.
Oh, no, I have mail hidden so that I can focus on you, Brian, and our listeners. Yeah,
I don't bother to do that. His subject was, why the hell do I stay with Apple?
Well, that's always like a personal question.
You know, apparently this is like, you know, there's a little bit of sentiment going, building up right there. And I will say, quite frankly, I'm nowhere near to giving up Apple products.
I'm not anywhere near giving up Apple products either.
Even with the worst security flaw in the history of computing, at least for user software, right? And possibly even the second worst, which was this flub up with the crack attack on airport routers, Apple's devices still offer an infinitely superior experience to me. Certainly not going to use Android from the standpoint of me being the product, and I don't like the Windows philosophy.
All right, so I didn't answer either of those questions, so I'm going to do that, even though we're totally out of time, but whatever. First, what would make me give up Apple products? Another company comes along and offers me a product that does what I need better than what Apple's products do.
Ooh, that's a good answer. So much better than my answer. Yeah, if someone else was going to do stuff better than Apple, I would seriously consider, but that's always been the case.
Sure. And
right. I have stuck with Apple because Apple's always been the best. And even though they've had these huge mistakes, by and large, I think they're still the best.
Yeah. I cannot find any product on the market that serves my needs as well as Apple's products do for the job that I do. And I know a lot of people say, hey, you know, you can get Linux and get this app and this app and or Windows and this. No. Not for me. Those are not the tools that work the way I want and work the way I need and give me the apps. And it's a whole package deal. Everything with Apple for me is coming together in such a way that even though I'm very frustrated at times, I cannot find any tool that serves my needs better.
Yeah. Likewise. So we appreciate the comments and feedback. Rick Allen also asked, by the way, what would be a good management structure for Apple? Why don't we table that one for next week?
Oh yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's a good topic. And facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. We seriously would love for you guys to join us there and take part in the conversation, give us some feedback, offer your opinions. I mean, you know, this stuff helps shape a lot of what we do.
Yes, it does.
You know, like no podcast, no website is anything without listeners and readers.
Yep, totally true.
And, you know, if you're listening to us right now, we'd love to hear from you.
And we love you.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. All right. So, listen, I've got a bunch to do today, including recording another show. And I think you've got a bunch to do, including some personal stuff. So,
right. And we've already held everyone over a couple extra minutes. So,
yep.
So we can fix that, though. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed in spite of Brian.
We'll theoretically see you online at the Mac Observer.